Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we made it. Sort of. It's finally toy department time.
Still here, y'all.
It's damn near Saturday in the Midwest as we tape this. But we did manage to find some time to get together from our respective bunkers. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. I got a tiny new headset.
Yeah.
Today. So hopefully I'm sounding a little bit better from confines of my apartment.
Well, ironically, I think I did something weird with my Skype window just as you said that. So the word shiny got blipped out as you described your fancy new headset. But you sound a lot clearer. You sound good.
It's not that shiny anyway. So it's quite all right. How was the end of the world treating you?
Not great. I'm melting down a little bit. The wife and I have both been pretty sick. I don't know what it was. It was different than anything I've ever had before. In some ways it mimics some of the stuff I've heard, from COVID reports. In other ways, not so bad. Really had no respiratory symptoms, a little bit of a cough. My wife has had a worse cough, but the worst part of it was like 24 to 36 hours of intense exhaustion and body aches. And now my son has a terrible cough as well, and he had to get an inhaler. So it's all a little stressful over here, but I do think everyone is going to be just fine.
Well, that's the important thing for sure. You know, working from home, I have, in my office, I always had, you know, during the day I'd have MSNBC on with the sound off.
Mm-hmm. And now the sound's on.
On a TV that doesn't, well, it didn't face my head, you know what I mean? I'd have to turn around to look at it.
Totally.
Now I'm, you know, sitting on my couch facing the TV all day. And it's not the best for either my productivity or mental health.
Yeah, I was going to say definitely not good for the mental health.
I now have this weird respect for Rachel Maddow in that, you know, she does her thing, right? She's like super thorough and informed. She's going to tell you some things and make some points that you're not hearing on the other programs, which is great. But it's also a little terrifying, those points. Like, the truth bombs that are coming out of there are not good if you're watching them anywhere near the bedtime hour. I will put it that way. So, I've definitely needed some of the stuff that we're going to talk about this week.
Yeah.
As a bit of an escapey kind of fare, for sure.
Not to toot our own horn too much, but it does feel like the dumb garbage we talk about is even more important for everyone's mental health these days.
Yeah. It's still the toy department, but, you know, thank God for toys.
Yes. Agreed.
Thank God
everything else is terrible.
All right. You know what? I want to give you the board because there's a lot going on. You know, we did a lot of stuff for homework. Where would you like to start this week?
I want to just start with the thing I watched most recently, which is Top Chef.
Okay, I can do that.
I took copious notes this week, first of all.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, because
I took none.
But
I remember this episode pretty clearly.
Yeah, I just find that, like, I struggle to keep the dishes with the people if I don't write some stuff down.
Yeah, that's fair.
The first thing I wrote down, though, is did you know your boy Kevin was a cancer survivor?
I did, yes. Okay. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution just did a really nice feature, which you can Google. My dad sent it to me. prior to the show. So I, you know, I'm a bit of a Gillespie head. I don't know if you know that about me.
I mean, you told me last week.
You know, I've been making recipes from the cookbook.
He's the chef.
Yeah. Oh yeah. By the way, he makes a mean Chick-fil-A sandwich that is, you know, it's kind of hard to recreate the Chick-fil-A sandwich in your home, but he has figured out how to do it, and it definitely works.
Oh, that's big information, because I don't like to go to that place.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's quite helpful, particularly on Sunday when you're hungover and it's not open anyway. Mm-hmm. It's actually called the Closed on Sunday Sandwich is the name of the recipe. And we have eaten at, I think, pretty much all of his restaurants in Atlanta, although I guess he just opened a new one. So, yeah, I have a lot of familiarity with his cooking and his story. And I think some of that stuff, you know, he sort of had that line right in the first episode about how he has people to do the mise en place.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
I think people like him and Voltaggio and some of the more established chefs were maybe at a little bit of a disadvantage in the first episode. And the second episode is maybe where more of that came home.
Yeah. And spoiler alert, his dish, which won, like, I have to say, this was a week. Some weeks you look at stuff and you're like, I don't get it. And they're like, this is the best shit I ever tasted. This was a week where I feel like I was on it from the look of a lot of these dishes.
That's interesting because, right, the LA Times food critic who was, I don't know if she's from the LA Times, but the food critic who was the guest judge, who was tremendous, like savaged a couple of dishes.
Oh my God. Right? I have some notes here.
she was like, I did, when I saw it, I was like, I don't know. And then I ate it.
Right.
It was amazing.
Yeah. So, but see,
but you were on it from the jump.
Well, I mean, when I say the look of it, I'm including the description, right? Because like his thing was like this terrine sort of croquette with apple butter. And it just like when they described the ingredients and I looked at the way he sort of dashed the top of it with the apple butter. And I was like, that thing is clearly phenomenal.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very Gillespie dish, too, I think.
Right on. The other one that immediately, I didn't even have to see it. As soon as Nini said masa ball soup, I was like, she's winning this damn challenge. because you know, and they even said this later when they were breaking down the sort of the entirety. Like, there's a difference between inspiration and imitation. And Nini took, like, the idea of the dining experience they had and turned it into very much her own different style of thing. Plus, anytime you go straightforward, simple comfort food with like just the right twist, it seems to hit home.
Yeah. And I also think particularly for this episode, which was a loving tribute to Jonathan Gold, who is an amazing food writer, like to make a dish that was unpretentious and delicious, but creative and kind of full of life and inspired. Like, it just really nailed the essence of that challenge. And you could just tell from when she started talking about it, that it was going to have that design. You know what I mean?
Totally.
Yeah, I thought it was really, honestly, all the top three, because, you know, those two were impressive. And I really think the fact that Voltaggio was like, yeah, I worked on a cruise for a little while. I knew some Filipino dudes, and I think I'm going to try to make Filipino cuisine. And then he just nails it.
Well, you know what stood out about that one when you looked at it was it beef short rib, I want to say?
Yeah.
It looked beautiful. Like, that just looked like an unbelievably perfectly cooked piece of meat.
Yeah. Well, he's, you know.
I mean,
he's
that's what
artist.
He does, right? Like, that's his. But it really, it did. It looked like art. On the other side, I can't believe Stephanie got away with making garbage Indian nachos for Padma.
Well, and that's the flip side of that, right? Stephanie was like, yeah, I'm going to try Indian this time. And no.
Yeah.
And it's funny because she clearly just wasn't thinking about the presence of Padma.
Totally. You saw as she realized what she had done, and it was like, another note I have is Malarkey. who didn't end up in the bottom three, and I was a little bit surprised by that. But the moment you looked at it, he had like a fried rice tartare with all sorts of crap going on, and it was like, that is a Joe Sasto level, overwrought, too much going on sort of meal happening.
Yeah, I mean, that was another one where I thought the critic really shined, where I think it was her, where she was like, this is what people who don't like restaurants hate about restaurants.
Yes, exactly. And then the place where she really shined, of course, was just crushing poor Angelo, who lost this episode. And honestly, like, when you saw him pour some random broth over a random piece of fish, even if it hadn't been what apparently was the most disgustingly sweet dish they've ever had on the show, I was like, that's not a winner, friend. That is not good. And then she crushed it 16 ways from Sunday, but when they were actually breaking it down, she was like, it's just such a shame to have this nice piece of fish and cook this twee dish. She called it twee.
Yeah.
I was like, well,
do you remember that episode? It was a super early episode of The Simpsons where I think it was the Valentine's Day episode where like Lisa breaks Ralph Wiggum's heart.
Oh, Ralph Wiggum. Okay.
And like Bart is like, he's like freeze frames it. He's like, you can see the moment where his heart breaks right here. When she said that tuna died in vain.
Yes, like, that tuna died in vain.
You can see Angela just go, oh.
Just an absolute dagger to the heart. Tuna died in vain.
Yeah, no, bring her in every week. I'm here for her every week.
Oh, by the way, speaking of every week, what a joy to have Gail back. Because that lady last year was a real piece of work. I was not a fan.
Yeah, well, no one's unhappy to see Gail ever, for sure. You know,
three other notes I wrote down. First of all, as soon as they hit Whole Foods and they cut to the they cut to the butcher, and somebody just goes, "Let me grab all the breasts." It's like quality Top Chef moment. Also, I forget whose it was, but the little cumin lamb dumpling, it didn't end up in top or bottom three, but in terms of just beautiful looking stuff, it looked like just an incredible dumpling, and they did seem to like it.
I did like the way that she described that as wrapped in love. You know what I mean?
Totally.
I don't know if it ate that way, but that is exactly what you want to think of a dumpling, for sure.
Definitely. And then the last thing, come on, Leanne. Get cheesy fish, really? We're doing cheese fish. Why is she on this show?
It has not been a good start for Leanne.
I'm not into it at all.
I really enjoyed, obviously, the gold food tour of LA.
Really great. How many of those have you been to?
That was the thing. I think I'd only been to one.
I think so, too. Which one?
Republic.
Okay. See, think I actually have been to Chengdu.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah, because if I remember correct, it's out near where I went to school. It's not in L.A. proper. It's out east.
Yeah. Well, and that's one of the great things about his writing, and then one of the great things about the city is that there are these amazing places way out, or places that are kind of stuffed into strip malls that serve the most amazing sushi. You know what I mean?
Well, that's what was cool about the food tour for me is none of those places were like, you know, fancy three Michelin star, you know, in all the guidebook type of places. They were all sort of hole in the walls, and all the people, they all seemed like the proprietors were active participants in every part of the restaurant. And all the proprietors that we got to see had such a meaningful connection with Jonathan Gold and the fact that he had been there and complimented their food. I thought that was really cool.
The woman that ran that Ethiopian restaurant, like that, I was genuinely moved.
Just want to give her a hug, man.
Yeah, I was genuinely moved by that. And also a little bit bummed because when I first moved there, I lived fairly close to that, to the Ethiopian area in Fairfax, and certainly drove through it on the way to work, like, all the time, and, like, didn't really take advantage of the food there. And so now I'm feeling a little FOMO.
A funny story about Ethiopian food and my relationship to it. A good friend of mine in high school and after, is Ethiopian, first generation. And his mother, and just like any time there was a thing at his house, it'd be like his mother and three aunts just like cranking out these massive platters of incredible Ethiopian food. So like I probably ate Ethiopian food more in high school by far than the average person, but never without my friend Abuna. So even to this day, I'm like a little intimidated by having to order my own Ethiopian food because I'm so used to either just like the family buffet or like Abuna will just handle the ordering because he really knows what's going on here and we'll all end up happy. So even now, I usually like I'm afraid to do anything but just like the meat platter or whatever because I know I love Ethiopian food, but I don't know which parts I love the most.
I think that is the beauty of those kind of places. A lot of times you can just be like, hey, bring me something good.
Totally.
You know what I mean? And throw it in their hands. By the way, that part did remind me. It was like genuinely weird to see Eric make an African dish and kind of miss, you know?
Yeah, although it seems like what he missed was the cabbage, not the flavors, right?
Correct. Yeah, he missed on the cabbage.
And that's why even though he ended up in the bottom three, like it never really felt like he had a chance of going home to me. It was just like, cook your cabbage better, you joker. It wasn't like you screwed this up. Whereas
yeah, you never know, though. I mean, last week on a seafood grill challenge, somebody made terrible fish and didn't get sent home. So
yeah, well, Leanne has a horseshoe up her ass, so I don't know how to explain that. But no, you're right. You never do know. But I really thought it was ultimately between Stephanie and Angelo, and I think they made the right decision.
I do too. You know, I have no problem with the way it went, either on the front end or the back end of that decision this week. And this was I just really enjoyed this episode, and it's got me excited for the season because I mean, look, it's an all-star season. You're not surprised there's talent in chess, but I think it's going to be genuinely competitive. And you know, LA is it's an easy town to do this in, right?
Because you could do anything.
So much of it.
Right.
You could do anything. There's so many cuisines. There's so many famous people to do things in. There's so many like scenic places to make food. You know, like there's just really a giant palette, I think, for them to work with this season. So
yeah, it's really cool. I'm excited. I'm excited as well.
Let's you want to jump to big time adolescence?
Okay, sure.
Okay. Oh, by the way, one more thing before we get off of Top Chef. Obviously, it's a show that's pioneering in the field of product placement.
Oh, man, is it? The BMW X7.
The BMW
Have fun
thing
in your
was,
BMW X7s.
Was aggressive.
Yeah, it was.
They made them all get in the cars and like be like, hey, BMW.
Yeah. Well, did you watch Last Chance? Did you watch Last Chance Kitchen?
I haven't watched it yet, no.
So okay, well,
spoil it for me.
I won't, but I'll just give you this slight spoiler. At the beginning of it, there's a gimmick where they, instead of doing the Last Chance Kitchen, they go to a restaurant. And they also do an aggressive BMW product placement where Tom's like, I'll drive. And then they get in the car and he's like, hey, BMW, take me to. It's really ridiculous.
Well, you know, I'm not going to complain about publicity for restaurants in our
no,
current moment, for
definitely
sure.
Definitely not.
And I'm glad there's a show on the air that continues to showcase the value of them.
Yep. And continues to tell the pretentious chefs when they're not showcasing the value of them.
Also true. In withering ways. What'd you think of Big Time Adolescence? I'm going all the way back to, like, this is, I think, the first thing that I watched from this week.
okay. So, I have complicated thoughts about this movie, actually.
Interesting. Okay.
For, I mean, do we have the running time? Let's pull up the running time just so I can make my comments accurately.
I gotta say, I have no idea what the running time is.
Yeah. Even 90 minutes. This was 75 minutes of a coming of age, cute, but not particularly deep comedy. And then it got pretty dark and ended. I mean, it was always kind of dark, but it got pretty really dark and kind of ended in this. Like, part of me 15 minutes before the end was like, this is pretty fun, but why are we here? And then at the end, I was like, somehow gripped or pulled or something happened where I was like, was that maybe really, really good? Or did I just get tricked somehow?
I feel like was that really, really good is the appropriate mood for it. Yeah. Like that's sort of the way I felt as well. Like, I think I was moved by that.
Yeah.
Was maybe the way that I would go. And yet it's not like I would be like, I can't sit there and be like, oh my God, what a performance by Pete Davidson.
You know what I mean? Davidson is just playing a caricature of Pete Davidson and he's perfectly good at it, but that's all it is.
Yeah. It's fun.
And the girl from Euphoria is good. And the kid at the center of it, whose name is Griffin, shout out my baby, is good, really good. And honestly, the star, acting-wise, is John Cryer, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
which is
a strange thing to say.
It is, but if there was someone who was sort of moving throughout the movie, it really was John Cryer. Like, he really did a good job of playing the concerned dad who doesn't want to push too hard but wants his son to be okay. And, you know, like, it's a delicate line for a parent to walk, and I think he did a great job of portraying that. But I'm with you. It's not – by no means could I say, like, oh, I have to recommend this movie. Like, you got to see Big Time Adolescence. But it was strangely moving.
Yeah, it's the perfect. I feel like it's a perfect movie for this time in the that. Hey, you're home. You need to watch something. Uh-huh. You won't be sad. You watch this. That's kind of where I'm at. Like, I wouldn't be like, oh my God, you got to see this movie. But
you'll have some laughs and you'll feel some things.
Yeah, and I would imagine that at least parts of it you will relate to. You know, whether that was your experience or not, you know what I mean? There's totally enough about it in terms of like wanting to fit in, you know, or wanting to find your place or, you know, or realizing your best days are behind you. Like, these are things that are, you know, not maybe universal to everyone, but universal enough that you're probably going to find one of them in you somewhere. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Or if none of that, then maybe in the dad.
Right, or maybe the dad. Yeah, I guess that's true. Because now we're the dads.
But honestly, all these people have a certain like core humanity to them that makes sense, and I think maybe that's the biggest achievement overall of this movie is it very easily could have devolved into an entire caricature of itself, and I don't think it ever does.
No, I would agree with that. It also gives me some hope for this upcoming Judd Apatow, Pete Davidson project, because I think, like I said, not that Pete was amazing, but I think in those hands, he's going to be a really good. Maybe that's a good segue into another Apatow protege, Jason Segel's Dispatches from Elsewhere.
Okay.
I don't know. You know, the president of A&E and I forget what the BBC America. was on The Watch not that long ago and sort of talking about, you know, some of the things that they try to do in terms of operating a network, which I think is interesting. But this show makes me sort of wonder, like, it definitely feels like the same person who greenlit this also greenlit Lodge 49. Like, there's a certain quirkiness. And look, Saul, which we'll talk about in a second, is obviously it has the bones of a different show, but it has a little bit of that quirkiness too. I think some of that just sort of randomness or.
Yeah, there is something fundamentally different, though. It's interesting. I think Lodge 49 is the right comparison. And in some ways, Dispatches from Elsewhere just feels like the star-studded spiritual sister of Lodge 49.
Yeah, and it's heavier, right? Lodge 49. And Lodge 49 did get emotional at times, and
you're right. Than I did. It's pretty silly.
Yeah, that one's definitely a little breezier, and this one is wild, but it's also sadder, I think. You know what I mean?
Well, there's certainly a sadness to Jason Segel's character that sort of permeates the show, right?
Yeah, well, and Sally Field's character, I think, has a sadness. Even
all of them, all four of them have a certain sadness.
They all have
a
sadness.
You're right.
And the show really invites you to lean into that, obviously, with the, you know, sort of that opening device in the "you are," you know,
yes,
that they start each episode with, and it all ends up in this place because it is so sort of weird. I can't, this show, we sort of try to help people figure out what to watch, and this is not a show that I feel like I could have a normal conversation with somebody about why they should watch the show, because I can't explain it in any way other than to say, like, well, these people are in it and it's weird. That's pretty much the only way I can sort of get my arms around it. I'm watching it and I could describe, I feel like, the series of events, and I think I'm kind of having a good time.
Yeah.
But I can't entirely say that I know what the fuck is happening.
No, I feel the same way. And I think if to your point, one of the thoughts I had was, like, what on earth was the elevator pitch for this show? And I think the answer is the elevator pitch was, do you want to be in the Jason Segel business?
Yeah, I think that's it. It's like, hey, you know that guy that went forgetting Sarah Marshall? He wants to write something for TV. Do you want it?
Yeah.
The bitch.
And honestly, like, it's one of those things where that could really lead you astray. And in some ways, this has all the bones of being led astray, but I definitely don't think it is. Does that make sense? Like, this has a lot of the components of what a show where it was greenlit because of the one guy and he gets it, but no one else ends up getting it. But, like, that's not where I feel like we're going. I feel like this is good. I trust this to come together for some reason.
I kind of do too. I completely get what you're saying, because I feel like there, like, you could describe a version of this show that would be everything you said would be true about the show that we're watching, but the show is instead terrible. Like, that show
exactly
exists.
That and that show, in fact, is easy to make.
Yes. And this is
here's another
not
thing.
That.
No, it's not. And let me ask you this: what do you think of Andre Benjamin?
What do I think of Andre Benjamin?
Yeah.
As like in general,
as a,
or in
as,
this show?
No, in this show, as at playing this character.
I think he's kind of the least compelling character of the main group. Actually, really of anybody. Now that I think about it, because even like, you know, this episode, like,
yes,
introducing us
girl.
To like Clara. Uh-huh. Yeah, like, she's awesome.
Even
and, like,
even the dude, even Richard Grant. You know.
Yeah. Yep.
Isn't that weird?
It is a little weird. And I don't think that that's Andre Benjamin's fault. I think that's the character as written.
I think that's 100% true. But there are so many choices about this that are bizarre and that sound like they would be bizarre in a bad way, but just aren't for some. Like, if I told you there's a TV show with Andre Benjamin, Jason Segel, Sally Field, and this young trans woman who's spectacular, by the way, and Andre Benjamin is like kind of a boring nerd, you'd be like, why?
Yeah.
But in a weird way, it works.
Yeah. Yeah. He has great boring nerd energy, actually. You know
he
what I mean?
He really does. It's a credit to him, I think, more than anything. But there's so much that's fascinating about this show that I think we're through, what, 5 episodes? I'm not really put off by the total insanity and lack of knowing what the hell's going on.
No. I'm also really enjoying the specificity of Philadelphia, and they've got them kind of leaning into that with the Fishtown episode this week, and some of the just weird sort of mental detours that everyone continues to take.
Yeah,
in these
I
shows.
Like that too, because I don't know about you, I'm a huge fan of Philadelphia.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I lived there once upon a time.
Oh, you did? I don't think I knew.
Yeah,
that.
I mean, in the suburbs. I was in New Jersey.
Uh-huh. I find,
but you know, Philadelphia, Jason.
I find Philadelphia to be one of the most charming cities in America.
Really?
Yeah, there's just something about, you know, it feels older than almost any city besides possibly Boston. Like,
well, it is, I think, right?
Right, but I mean, you know, New York's effing old, but it's all been rebuilt. You know what I'm saying? Like, Philadelphia retains this agedness that I think kind of makes it the perfect place for a weird story like this.
Yeah, I agree. Because it's weird that, like, when I was first watching it, I just kind of assumed it was New York. And then after a while, you obviously there's the art museum set piece and a couple other things where you start going, oh, okay, yeah, Philly. And I'm interested to see how it's more and more. By the way, the experience that Jason Segel had with the show is sort of based on
that was here.
Actually in San Francisco.
Yeah, I knew that.
Which is a very San Francisco idea.
It is. Like. There's also apparently there's a documentary about it that this is sort of based on that I feel like at some point we may need to watch.
Yeah, well, and you know what I think I'm gonna try to watch. Sort of inspired by this is the End of the Tour. Have you ever seen that?
I have not, but that we should put it on the list because I would like to watch it. And you know, David Foster Wallace, shortly before he passed, was a adjunct professor at my college. Like I had friends in his class.
Did not know that. No. Yeah. Yeah, I don't want to put it on the list for next week just because I think we have a full boat for next week, but maybe let's do it the week after.
Fully on board for that down the road, no question.
Yeah, for sure. And that also, I guess, leads us to Saul.
Okay.
Which is the predecessor, I guess, lead-in? Lead-in, I guess, is the better word?
Sure.
For Dispatches from Elsewhere on Monday nights. And, whoo boy. I mean, Saul's at the top of its game. We said that earlier. But this episode
in particular. It's
I
all
mean,
coming
that
together.
Last scene. yeah, and it's weird because we're not quite there yet. I mean, I feel like, right, like the place that we're at, and just based on knowing what we know about the world of Breaking Bad and, you know, what comes after, you know, Kim has sort of become the central, you know, the emotional sort of center of this, right? Like, I mean, that, as a viewer, you mostly want to know, what happens to Kim? Why isn't she in Breaking Bad?
Yes.
And like, this is the first time where I felt like, oh, maybe I could really see it.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? But knowing that there's a season and change more story to go, it sounds like maybe we're not quite there yet. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's, she is, first of all, Rhea Seehorn, man, is really awesome. This is, I mean, it's an incredible role, but she does so much work without saying stuff.
Yeah.
It really is. She's a pretty quiet, understated person, the character. You know, she doesn't say a ton. but like you're just you feel all these emotions that she's going through, and she is in some ways the like moral center of the show, and in other ways like in her own whirlwind just trying to hold the center. It's awesome to watch.
Yeah, for sure. And like, she's not a perfect person by any means, but she is compelling. What a compelling character. And you know, I honestly, it sort of makes me, you know, we talked about this, I think, even when Breaking Bad was on, that, you know, Skyler, I think, really got sort of an unfair rap, you know, just based on sort of her role as the wet blanket in the show's right. early years, when you kind of come to realize that, oh, wait, she's the good guy.
Right. Right? Like,
you know, she's basically living with the virus and trying to keep it from spreading, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And it almost makes you wonder if, like, Gilligan really wanted to – I almost call him Vince Gill the country singer.
That's a mean thing to do.
Yeah, wanted to have, you know, a show that with a great female character at its centerpiece that was a little maybe less ambiguous to fans, or I don't know if you worry about that kind of stuff. But
right. Yeah, I mean,
she's
incredible. No idea if
relationship between those two, it's – you know what I mean? Like, there's this whole other great side plot with Mike and whatever's going on with him and leading us into Gus World and all that. But if the show was just Jimmy and Kim, or now I guess Saul and Kim, you wouldn't mind, right? You know?
No, you wouldn't mind at all. And even just look at so like you said, that other storyline I think is fascinating. And you know, Mike and Nacho coming together now, like, that relationship is manifesting the sort of its roots that we see.
I mean, that's where most of the quote unquote fan service is happening, right?
That's what I was kind
of
going
to
say.
Right?
I was going to say it almost feels like it's, you know, come for the Breaking Bad prequel, stay for the complex relationship drama.
Yeah,
and that's why I think what Rhea Seehorn in particular, but Bob Odenkirk too, who, like, whatever, 10 years ago he was just a silly guy who from Mr. Show, you know what I mean? And he's really built one of the most compelling and interesting characters on TV.
Yeah, I mean, you know, through two great shows.
Yeah,
the idea that they could have built this kind of show around the Saul Goodman character, like, if you said that to me and you know, season two or three of Breaking right. Bad, I would have thought you were freaking
thought
nuts.
It was, like, you'd be like, yeah, a sitcom, maybe.
Yeah.
Like, a bad one.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think, like, obviously we've learned a lot about what Vince Gilligan, not Gil, is capable of. And this is 1970s heavyweight boxing, man. That these guys are at the peak of their game, to the point where there are times where I start to be like, God, can they maintain this fever pitch for another season and a half? And then I'm like, yeah, they probably can.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I have no doubt that they could keep this up. Like, I have seen enough to know that they're not going to let me down. And, you know, if I can get a great music montage,
oh man,
you know, if there are 15 more of those in my life,
so good.
I will be happy.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. We've got two things left on the board. I'm very excited about one and significantly less excited about the other. So which one would you like to go with?
Really?
Yeah. All right. Let's just jump into Blow the Man Down. How's that?
Am I to take that you did not like this movie?
I didn't really care for it.
Huh.
It's just, it's just one of those things where, you know, and we're going to talk about Tiger King at some point in the future, where maybe this is that for me, where it's just like, it's just not my thing so much.
Okay. here's what I thought. I thought this was a different and intense.
It's definitely different.
It's intensely compelling, I thought, and just a sort of haunting ending that, you know, I talked about how at the end of Big Time Adolescence, I was kind of like, I think I just love that. At the end of this, I was just like, it's like a fish knife to the gut. And I thought everyone was really good, with the sole exception of Margot Martindale's bad accent.
The accents were really hard for me. I think that was a large part of it, was like, I didn't want to be in this town.
Right. You know what I mean? But most of the accents I thought were at least consistent, whereas Margot Martindale seemed to go in and out of. You know, it's funny because you go into a movie like this where she's the only person you heard of being like, well, I'm sure she's going to kill it. And she kind of didn't. But I really just thought the writing and the direction and this was a movie that's very different from anything I've ever seen. And I found it compelling.
Yes, it's like Two Forks in the Road. I was like, this is a movie that was different from anything I've ever seen. And I just wasn't really that into it.
I'll say this, it's dark. There's not a lot of, like, I mean, it's one thing to not have joy in the plot or the theme or whatever, but this is kind of a joyless thing.
It's like, what if Manchester by the Sea was a murder thriller almost? Do you know
yeah
what I, mean?
I did not see Manchester like... by the Sea, but yeah, I imagine that's right. And I think I would rather watch the murder thriller version of Manchester by the Sea than actual Manchester by the Sea.
Yes, I think I also think you would like that. Knowing that you were not a fan of Bad Time Entertainment, as it were, I'd say that's probably fair.
Yeah, and this to me wasn't that kind of Bad Time Entertainment. It was dark and stormy, so to speak, and certainly like. It was of the earth that is the northeastern seaboard. Like it very much felt of New England.
I think that's just what it was for me. It's like, I just feel like I've had enough New England Gothic in my
life. Fair enough.
You know what I mean? And maybe, you know, that's me not really giving it a fair shake, which is kind of why I compared it to Tiger King. I think.
I resent the implication therein. However, that's a topic for next week.
That is indeed a topic for next week.
I guess then, if you didn't like Blow the Man Down, that means you just want to say nice things about Terriers. And I have to be honest with you, I cannot quibble with that at all. Because
yeah, I'm in on Terriers.
How could you not be in on Terriers? And it 5 minutes into Terriers, knowing it was a one season thing in what? Do you know the year?
Mid 2000s, I think. Now I gotta look it up.
Yeah, I mean, it's been like 10 or 15 years. 2010, so exactly 10 years. Like, knowing it was one season 10 years ago, literally 5 minutes in, it's like, if this debuted 2 years ago, it would still be on for sure.
I do feel like that's true. And I think it's just one of those things that people didn't find it. I don't know if people were yet thinking of FX as a place that made great TV at the time, or
that's as good an excuse as anything. Because look, I don't know if this is great TV. What it is incredibly watchable and wildly charming.
Yes, it's both of those things. And the relationship between the two lead characters, I think, is...
it's awesome.
You know, at its heart, look, this is a procedural. Like, this is a show that could have been on TNT or USA, you know, and sort of the kind of mystery of the weakness about it, you know what I mean? But it also feels like there's way more than that going on. And I think a lot of that is the complexity of the two lead characters who are... I think giving really good performances, but also a lot of the supporting players as well.
Yes, and not only are the two lead characters giving really good performances, and they're both just incredibly charming actors, but neither of the characters are quite what you expect. Like, Donald Logue, you know, if you describe this, ex-police detective who lost his job because of he is an alcoholic, is running a private eye firm with his sort of shiftless buddy. Like, you expect a certain thing from each of those characters, and they're both so much more interesting and complex and likable than what that sounds like.
Yeah, I would agree with that 100%. And they're, you know, flawed in really interesting ways.
Right, and not in the ways that, like, oh, it's another alcoholic police detective, you know? Like, flawed in creative ways that are not necessarily exactly what you'd expect.
Yeah, totally. Totally. And I'm here for it. Whatever the mystery of the week is generally compelling. The show surprises me all the time. And I have just been kind of plowing through them. It's sort of been my binge watch these last couple of days. I think I got four more left to go.
Yeah. Well, I guess I would just say, if our goal with going back to shows like this is to find something that you can enjoy with your extra free time stuck in your house right now, I think this is a home run.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's not also not one that's like too weighty or taxing.
No.
You know what else I also really want to mention too is that, like, they shot this thing. It's set in San Diego, and they actually shot it there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of really great exterior scenes, and you can tell that it's really San Diego. And I just generally appreciate that. There's not enough of that on TV. It's one of the, we mentioned it in Devs too, but it's one of the things that that I like. You know, as much as I love Atlanta, you know, seeing everything in LA or Atlanta all the time.
Right.
I guess Vancouver sort of gets thrown in that mix sometimes as well. You know, it's nice to see like real places. You know, and
yeah,
I feel like it really does help these shows have a little bit of character, you know?
No, I totally agree.
So yeah, Terry's strong recommend from me.
Yeah. Four big thumbs up all around.
I'm happy that you liked that one. And really hoping that you're going to come around on Tiger King, which is going to be in our homework for next week.
I mean, let's just a quick preview. For people who somehow have not already watched as much of Tiger King as they have interest in watching, because it does seem like there's two kinds of people. People who aren't interested in more than about 10 minutes or at most one episode, and people who couldn't stop watching it.
I got to be honest. You are the only person that I've met in the former camp. Like, I'm not saying you're alone, but everyone else who has mentioned this show to me is like, oh my God, dude, Tiger King. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, I have to be honest. And I am particularly, I don't know why other than I just love animals, but I'm particularly sensitive to the kind of inhumanity of these shithole redneck roadside zoos. Like, it fills me with a rage that I'm becoming way too familiar with these days. But I find it extraordinarily upsetting. And like every second that goes by that these people aren't mauled by a tiger and that tiger is not then let out into the wild of the Bengal jungle, I am just livid.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if it helps, some of them do get mauled by the tiger. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's, Not all of them skip the tiger, or tigers, as it were.
Yeah, and look, if it means a lot to you that I watch a second episode, I think I'll handle
it. It does, because at the very least, I want to have this fight next week.
Okay, I'm comfortable with that.
There's some. If you've listened to the show, I feel like you can guess at least half the homework
yeah.
this week. Because Ozark's back, and just in freaking time, you know what I mean?
Yep.
I am ready and plan to. I think I may have watched the whole thing by the time that we are back next week.
Man, that's a lot of content, but I'll see what I can do.
Well, I'm not asking that you do that. I'm just saying it's going to be, you know, I'm not going anywhere.
Yep.
And there are no other human beings in my house, so
yeah. How's the dog?
Dog's good. He's Where'd she go? The dog may have left during this discussion. She was just over there on the floor. But yeah, it's me and her, and she's ready for Ozark 2. And we've obviously got another episode of Top Chef that we'll dive into, and the challenge is back. We were just saying this pre-show. I don't think we've had Top Chef and the challenge simultaneously. That is going to be a lot to break down.
It is, but this is where we thrive.
It is where we thrive, and every season of the challenge is All Stars, right? Like, I mean, isn't just it? Sort of by design.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. So
yeah, and I believe we've both scouted the cast list here, and it's not disappointing.
No, it is not, because these people have nothing else to do. This is really what they live for.
No, and I am worried about these people, because I'm sure they can't challenge during a pandemic. I don't know what they'll be doing.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's it, right? It's like, there's literally nowhere you could send them. Well, I take that back. There are no known cases on Antarctica, right? Maybe they could be in Antarctica on a challenge.
Yeah, I don't know if the challenge producers have the clout to get tests for everybody like an NBA team, though. So we'll see.
I kind of doubt it. You've heard the story, right, about I don't know if it's an American Big Brother house, but there's some Big Brother house that has been sequestered like through the start of this and has no idea about the pandemic.
Oh my God.
So who knows? Maybe there's a challenge house somewhere that's the same thing.
Yeah, that's true. I guess if they had started taping the new season before, but somehow I doubt it.
Yeah. I have to say, I feel like there's a real opportunity, right? We talk about the challenge as, you know, America's next great sport.
Yeah.
Well, here it is at a part of the calendar where there are literally no sports. Like,
it is true.
I feel like Vegas really ought to try to exploit the gambling opportunities here.
But I don't know if they can.
Oh, there's the dog. Yeah, well, look, you can bet on the Oscars. You can bet on there are things that you can bet on pro wrestling. There are things that you can bet on where
that are scripted,
you know, the outcome
way
is sort
the outcome
of
is
known. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Okay. Well, the Oscars, the outcome isn't really known. It's like in a suitcase.
It's done by a few people, yeah.
Right.
But I think you can bet on like American Idol back in the day and a couple other things like that. So
interesting.
I don't know.
Can you bet on The Bachelor? Because that would be the easiest comp, I would think.
I'm almost certain that there's somewhere where you can get a bet on The Bachelor, but I don't think there are too many places you could like go to Vegas to do that. But I bet online you can bet on The Bachelor somewhere for sure.
Yeah. I mean, if there's a way to gamble on the challenge, I think everyone knows we're here for it.
Yeah, and ready to clean up, I feel like. So the challenge is back. I'm also, by the way, very excited that it's going to be an individual challenge this time instead of teams.
Yeah, and it seems like another sort of chunk of new blood as well, which should be interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Although, you know, rookies get ganged up on. That's how it rolls.
That's true. That's true.
That's what that show's about. All right, so those things are in the bag. You may have also guessed that there's a new Pearl Jam record this week.
Yeah.
We want to talk about that. I don't want to give too much away, but I think it's one of their better efforts in a while.
Interesting. Yeah, I listened to one or two songs, and I was not displeased, but I just I had to move on for various reasons.
Yeah, well, I understand. I was fortunate enough to hear it at least once pre-pandemic.
Oh.
And now a couple of times post. So
I imagine you guys are playing that a lot, right?
Yeah, yeah. There's definitely a couple songs that have hit our airwaves already, and I would dare say not the best ones.
Interesting.
So that's I guess probably a good sign for that record.
What when was the last Pearl Jam record?
7 years ago, 2013, wow. Lightning Bolt. Yeah.
That's probably – that's got to be as long as they went between any records, right?
Yeah, I think that's about as long a gap as they have had between studio albums. There were a couple – I want to say maybe Post Binaural was a really long time.
I'm pulling up the discography right now to double check.
Yeah, so, but you can,
where,
you
what,
can let me
know. This is really a discussion for next week, but what's your general position on Pearl Jam? You a big Pearl Jam guy?
Oh yeah, huge Pearl Jam guy.
Okay, I think I knew that.
Yeah, that was
Binaural.
My favorite
band. No, because Riot Act came out 2 years later.
Okay.
Before this, they never went more than 4 years between albums before this.
Wow. All right.
So that's almost twice as long. I am interested. By the way, good God. The commercial success of this band is remarkable.
It is. I mean,
it's got the, you know, all the chart rankings on here. And they don't have a single album that didn't get into the top five on the U.S. charts.
Yeah. And a lot of those, you know, kind of like what you think after sort of the post-commercial peak of the band.
The only one that wasn't top two is Riot Act.
Yeah.
That is unbelievable.
Yeah. It's pretty wild. And they, you know, especially when you consider that they really actively tried to short circuit their commercial success for a giant chunk of their career. So
I've still never seen Pearl Jam live. I got to do that.
That is unbelievable,
isn't
me.
It? But you know, it's what's weird is like Pearl Jam went very quickly from like I love them, but I'm kind of pre-concert going age to like they cost a little too much for me to be super excited about paying for it.
Oh yeah, see, because you know they were right in the pocket for me. My second show ever was a Pearl Jam show.
Yeah.
And then
like Vitalogy, you know, came out when I was 13, you know?
Right.
I'm just
the early shows where they were most popular, right? And like waging the wars against Ticketmaster, they were really low ticket prices was obviously that was a big sticking point for them, right? So so the early shows when you'd really want to go actually were kind of affordable.
Yeah. And
then eventually when they made peace with the we're going to have to do this and they just, you know, started charging a full boat.
Right.
But I'm surprised given that, you know, festivals and how many times that they have played
it's
the
weird.
Bay Area that you haven't been. I mean, I probably saw 20 Pearl Jam shows when I lived in San Francisco.
No, it's weird. I admit it's weird and it's my fault. It's just for whatever reason, I've never gotten out to a Pearl Jam show and I really would like to. I have to do that. That's a bucket list item.
Yeah, that's and it, they are. I mean, you know,
Eddie's from where
the
I'm
evolution
from
of that band.
Too.
Yeah,
Eddie's a Midwestern, a good Midwestern boy.
I've seen him at Wrigley. It's quite a thing.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't know that they've ever played Comiskey. Sorry,
or no
U.S. Bank or whatever the cellular
rate field.
What are the guaranteed rate field? That's what it is now.
Let's not talk about it. The White Sox, though. If we ever play baseball again, may actually be decent.
Yeah.
I know that's the content anymore. Everybody's here for.
It's seriously, the Brockmeyer is a documentary, I think.
Oh, man. Can I just quickly on Brockmeyer? There's so many wonderful moments in this show. But the one I can't get out of my head for whatever reason, like this whole bit about him going to cosmetic school so he could do his daughter's hair.
Yeah.
And then he's like, he's so upset that she's not letting him do her hair anymore. And then his assistant walks in.
I knew exactly what you were going to say.
The black woman who's his assistant walks in and he's like, he starts to reach his hand out and he's like, who does your hair? And she's like,
a black woman.
What the hell is wrong with you, man? It was so good. Oh, God. Brockmeyer.
I believe that Saturday Night Live's just Shear Zameda.
Is that
you say that? I believe yes. I believe that is who that is.
I'm not as someone who does not watch Saturday Night Live.
Oh, that's right. You don't watch Saturday Night Live. Yeah, yeah. There you go.
Okay, I think we got a full boat. Is that everything?
I think we do. We're gonna check in on political comedy as well. John Oliver and Hasan Minhaj coming back next week. So we're just gonna see if. Given that things have stepped up intensity wise in
given
our time,
where we're at,
yes. If comedians have stepped up to match, and that's a full show. That's a full show.
I can't wait. Hopefully, we'll get it done on Thursday next week. Personal and worldwide meltdowns notwithstanding.
Yeah, you know, I just realized there's going to be lions and tigers and bear. All next week.
Oh, yeah. My. I don't know how to. I'm the dad, but that was a joke befitting my group. Well played, sir.
Thank you very much.
And with that, I will say bye.
Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.